You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
What do you say after what happened to Arkansas and Memphis the other day? We'll try to find the words today on our podcast. Christina Long will be in studio with me. We'll also give you some thoughts on fall baseball if you want to feel a little bit better about the Razorbacks. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And you get Coach Yost out there coaching the Razorback defense. Not much desire to talk about from Arkansas in that area defensively, not just against Memphis the other day, but just in general. We have not seen it from them this year. Yeah, we can talk about games being close and mistakes for Arkansas, but you know, when it comes right down to it, the reason that they are in the situation they're in is because of defense. That's the problem with this Arkansas football team. Like, if you want to boil it down to, you know, the heart of the matter, it's defense. And we knew it from the beginning of the season. First possession of the year, Alabama A&M takes it right down the field. Very little resistance from Arkansas. And you knew at that point, when they're going to play better teams, they're going to have trouble. And that's what's happened. You know, we saw it against Arkansas State to an extent. Arkansas State bailed Arkansas out a little bit with some turnovers, not finishing drives in the red zone and things like that. And you guys who cover the team, Christina, you knew it in the preseason. Like, these closed scrimmages, I hate the closed scrimmages. And because when you open up a scrimmage, it's one thing to have open practice. But when you have an open scrimmage, that's when you can get kind of a baseline for, you know, to form an opinion on a team. And when the scrimmages are closed, you're just getting readouts from the games. But you and Ethan have both said this. In the preseason, when you're hearing that Monte Harrison, the 30-year-old baseball-turned receiver, is getting 45-yard touchdowns and 50-yard and like not just one but multiple, all of a sudden it kind of makes your eyebrow raise and say, something may not be right there. So I think you guys knew it from the start of the season. You're seeing it play out the last couple of weeks on the road. When you average 33 points on the road, and that's what Arkansas's done the last 2 weeks, you should be able to win games. And the defense is letting them down. Offense is not perfect. They're far from perfect. They had their problems in the second half against Memphis the other day. But the offense has disappeared 2 weeks in a row. And I wonder if there's some pressure that's like being put on the offense. Like, you have to be too perfect because the defense is too imperfect. And I guess that's where we'll start the show today. Is the defense, I feel like, that is the problem. This is not the NFL. You can't cut a player because he's not performing. You can't go sign a free agent because you might be deficient in one or two areas. You got to live with what you got. And Memphis, that was the most winnable game, I think, that they've got over the last 10 weeks. Maybe put it a different way. That's the worst team I think they're going to see over the last 10 weeks of the season when they got eight SEC games and they've got Notre Dame. And to not finish that game the other day, you know, some programs, they find ways to win. It just feels like Arkansas finds ways to lose. And the defense is a real big key component to that.
It's been so interesting to me because you mentioned it puts pressure on the offense and that they have to be so perfect. And last year we talked about that on the opposite end. We talked about how the defense had to be pretty close to perfect because the offense just needed so long to get going, or they had to account for the fact that the offense was going to make mistakes, or there was going to be a weird turnover or something like that. They were going to give away things they shouldn't give away. And so the defense had to be as good as it could possibly be to keep them in games. And a lot of times that was the case. You know, the defense wasn't perfect last year, and they did lose, you know, several games, obviously. And so now they're in a situation where it's the complete opposite. You have to be prepared to win shootouts, you know. And like we've talked about before, the Memphis loss, maybe they're going to win, you know. I think they are probably going to win a couple of shootouts. Honestly, you know, I still think Notre Dame's going to win this weekend. But, you know, Notre Dame doesn't have a particularly good defense right now. It hasn't faced, you know, I don't know. It's faced some really good teams that we'll see what Arkansas is able to get against them. But the Notre Dame defense looks gettable for an Arkansas offense that has been operating at the level that it's been operating at. So that's interesting. I don't think they're going to be able to get it done because they've just had two games that they should have gotten it done. They had the opportunity to get it done and they couldn't. And the defense has put them in positions where they have to be perfect. And then they haven't been perfect. They've had those late turnovers. And so, yeah, it's the situation that they're in. There's been a lot of concern about a lack of effort. Coach Pittman talked a little bit about that today, was asked, if he's concerned about effort. And, he talked a lot about kind of the mindset and the mentality that they're taking and things like that. Because I imagine, we're not inside the locker room, obviously, but I imagine it's pretty hard. Even if even if you delete Instagram and Twitter off your phone or whatever, and you're not listening to the outside noise or whatever, you hate to lose, and you hate to lose the way they've lost. And how do you not, how do you look at the rest of the season? And I imagine it's hard to get as motivated as you could be when you've lost the way that they've lost these last couple games.
You said Notre Dame's defense is gettable. So is Arkansas's.
Exactly. That's the problem. Yeah.
And I don't know how you fix some of the problems that we're seeing with these guys other than you say, if you don't give effort, if you are loafing on a play, Reggie Herring used to put pink jerseys on players whenever they were loafing and then everybody got upset about it. If you're loafing on a play, you don't play. But the problem with that is that, okay, if you take this guy out, then all of a sudden your already bad defense probably just got a little bit worse because you're taking one of your best not good players off the field, if that makes any sense. It just feels like one of the big problems with this defense, there is a talent level problem there, and we saw that in the preseason, especially up front on the defensive line. I would say maybe to a lesser extent in the secondary. And then a linebacker, Xavien Sorey, was supposed to be the best player on this defense, and he looks like he's running around on one leg out there. Just has not looked good the last couple of weeks. But it just comes down to these are basic fundamentals of football. Run hard to the ball. Form tackle. They're not doing these things. Like, when you are – it's third and goal at the four-yard line, and you got a quarterback running downhill, and you try to tackle him with your shoulder, good luck with that. That's not going to work. It's third and eight. Backup quarterback is in the game, and your 390-pound defensive tackle won't bring him down. That's the Razorback defense. Like, if you want a one play to size up, I feel like what we've seen from Arkansas defensively during the Sam Pittman era, it is that play where Ian Giffrard, 390 pounds against a quarterback who's like, 204? You can't bring him down. And not only does he not bring him down, that guy is pulling him past the first down marker.
Yeah.
Incredible. Like, and that's, everybody talks about having big guys. By the way, did you see the Eagles-Rams, how that finished yesterday?
No, I missed it.
So Jordan Davis, the Rams are lining up for a game-winning field goal. And not only does Jordan Davis block the kick, but then he's 340 pounds, picks it up, and runs 19 miles an hour down the field for a touchdown.
Wow.
As time expires.
That's amazing.
There's a difference between having big people and having big athletic people. And what we saw with Giffrard at the end of that game, and say what you saw from like a Jordan Davis, and those are the types of players that Georgia and Alabama and their ilk are churning out. I saw Jordan Davis run down an Arkansas running back like laterally to the sideline one time. And you're like, okay, this is a different type of athlete. So I don't know, that's an aside. Just having big people in the middle doesn't necessarily fix it. I don't think this is going to get better for Arkansas defensively. I really don't. Like Notre Dame, they come in here, they're averaging 40 points a game. I think there's probably a pretty good chance that they either hit that average or come really close to it. Have you seen Tennessee's offense?
Like, not a whole lot, but I know that it's a problem.
And that could get ugly
in
a few weeks over there. And think about it, they're going to be motivated. They're going to be mad about last year. They're going to be pissed that Arkansas played Rocky Top and they rushed the field.
Oh, man, I forgot they played Rocky Top.
It's like in the final, like I said earlier, in the final 10 games, Memphis, that was probably the easiest opponent Arkansas was going to play. Their quarterback was not good. He can throw, he can't pass. Yeah. Well, he was like 5 of 16 at one point.
Yeah, it was really bad.
And he finishes 15 of 30.
Yeah.
Their defense, there were holes in that defense all day long. It's the mistakes that's killing Arkansas. Right. It is, just take your pick on the mistakes. I don't know how you fix it. I don't know how you fix it with this roster in season. I just don't think I see it changing.
Yeah, it's just, it comes down to how much, you know, how much can you change in season? You know, the best teams, I think, do improve and do make some adjustments and yeah, kind of are able to get through some of the problems that they have early. But I think there's some things that there's only a certain level to which you can solve those problems in the middle of a season, right? Because like you said, you have the guys you have. What do you do? And I think, honestly, you mentioned Xavien Souré. There's been a lot of guys that I had higher expectations for that just haven't met them, like Larry Wirth. And I don't know if with Wirth specifically, if it's a matter of how they haven't really locked a position down for him and they've kind of made him do a lot of different stuff, but he was disappointing the other day. Like, some of these guys that I just thought would be kind of anchors of this defense have just not performed. And it's difficult because we've seen Travis Williams have really good defenses. We've seen Travis Williams defenses play with great effort. I don't know what you point to. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's motivation. I don't know if it's, I've seen a lot of people being like, it's just what you get with transfer players nowadays. And I'm like, there are teams winning with transfer players that care, that put forth effort. I don't think you can look at every player that ever transfers and go, that kid doesn't care. That kid plays with no effort, because there's lots that do. So I don't really buy that. I think I've seen that a lot today. But I just, I don't know. And there's probably not one thing. There's not just one thing you can point to and say, this is why or this is the reason. But it's just, yeah, it's been disappointing in a way I just didn't expect.
Drew Sanders was a transfer player, and that guy played his ass off.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really good. I think you can get a bad batch, though, of transfers. Like, if they don't, and I'm not saying this is what happens with Arkansas. I'm just saying, like, I think this can happen with teams where they're really talented. But if they don't like each other, they ain't gonna play hard for each other.
Which, and it's weird because I haven't gotten that vibe. You know, it's hard because we've been seeing them in preseason and before things got tough, and everything changes when things get tough.
Everything's rosy in August.
Exactly. But I just haven't gotten that vibe. And, you know, it's hard. We're not in the locker room, obviously. We only get so much preseason practice time to watch them. But I just haven't gotten that feeling. I don't know. There's times when you can tell the vibes are really bad with a team. And I just, maybe we're just too early to tell and it's about to get bad. But I don't know. It's strange.
I think the most frustrating thing here is that Arkansas, they could be undefeated. They could be ranked. This town could be on fire with Notre Dame coming in this weekend. Instead, they're 2-2. And they've got a losing SEC record. And it didn't feel like there's any real hope in the future, at least for this coaching staff. And that's kind of the Pittman era in a nutshell, right? I mean, close and unable to seal the deal. That loss at Memphis on Saturday, I feel like we've seen that play out how many times before? Tons of times before. We saw it the week before in Oxford. We saw it in Arlington a few times against A&M. We saw it in Stillwater last year. We've seen it against Mizzou, it feels like, a number of times. So he was asked about this today, but he kind of downplayed it. But I really do feel like there is a lack of a killer instinct from this team, and I think it starts at the top. I think that teams who have a head coach who demands attention to detail and they demand excellence, they don't play like that. Coaches that, you know, they demand that you tackle and they demand that you hold on to the football and they demand that you line up correctly on a punt and they demand that you come out of a timeout with 11 players on the field and not 12, and they demand that you don't throw interceptions, and they demand that you don't run 10 yards backward when you're about to get sacked and you're in field goal range and it's a close game in the fourth quarter. These are the problems that with Arkansas football, and that's why I say they find ways to lose. They are one of the world's best at finding ways to pull a loss out of the jaws of defeat.
Victory.
Well, yeah, there you go. You knew what I was saying.
I knew where you were going. I've heard you say it before, because we've talked about this before, because it keeps happening.
7-19 in one score games. It's never one thing, right? Yeah. It's never one thing. No. It's all the little things, and they add up. And I think that's why people are so frustrated with this football team. I think there's a lot of potential with this team, even if there are some defensive holes, to win a lot of games. And, you know, but you have to win the winnable games. Yeah. Like Memphis, you have to win that. And this program, they just don't do it enough. Talk all the time. There's a fine line between being 4-8 and being 8-4. And right now, Arkansas, they're on the wrong side of that fine line. And I wonder, too, and Pittman was asked about this today as well, but in this era of when players are always looking for the next big payday, and they're always looking for the next coaching staff that's going to show them some love in recruiting. You know, I mean, you hear that all the time. You know, they've got rabbit ears, and they're on social media after the games, and they're searching their names. And we see that they're searching their names because if you tweet about them, they're liking that tweet within an hour or two of the game ending. In that type of environment, I feel like this season has the potential to go off the rails. Now, maybe it doesn't. And maybe we see that Sam Pittman can coach a little bit more than people give him credit for if he's able to keep this team together. And maybe they're able to cobble out another 6-6 type season. But it doesn't feel this early this year. This feels different than in some of those years where, you know, like there was a 4-8 year where he got to keep his job. But like in some of those 6-6 years, or I guess there's been two, this just feels different than early in those years.
I think so too. And it's hard for me to put my finger on why, but even just going over there today, and I don't mean it felt different coming from Sam. I mean, just the way I felt, and I think the way that just the vibe was going into the press conference felt different than I've felt it before. You know, I was like, I've covered bad teams. I've covered Arkansas teams where there was anxiety. I've covered, you know, all last season. We kind of thought last season was going to be Sam's last season, regardless. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't necessarily like week to week we walked in going, all right, we're talking, you know, it didn't have that like dead man walking vibe. And today it started to creep in. Now, Sam handled it as well. You know, he always, and he said something about this. He was like, I have been in this position basically for 3 years.
He said it feels like 40.
Yes. And so he always handles it really well. And I give him a ton of credit for that because I know that has not been easy. But it's just, yeah, the vibes are really low. And then we were joking before some of the other reporters before the press conference about how Arkansas it would be for them to beat Notre Dame this weekend. But I don't think they're going to. But it did get me, and we were kind of discussing this, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Is there anything you think they could do this weekend in a loss? You know, assuming they don't, because obviously winning changes the conversation, but if they still lose, is there anything they could do this weekend and show that would like give you a little bit of optimism from a loss?
No, yeah. Nothing. If they were to beat Notre Dame and they were to beat them, you know, let's say like 20 points or so, that might cool things off for a little bit. I don't think there's any, because I mean, like the losses that they've had these last 2 weeks, it's not like, I mean, like both games, they very easily could have won. And you might even be able to say they should have. I think they should have beaten Memphis. Memphis, by the way, just a quick aside, if that's a playoff team, you got to really start thinking about how do you change the playoff and get that whole group of five, group of six automatic bye out of there. Because that team, to me, looks like a team that's going to go into their conference and probably lose 2 or 3 games or 4 games. And you're going to look at them at the end of the season. Arkansas is going to look at them at the end of the season. And they're going to say, that felt a little bit like Oklahoma State last year. Like, how did you lose to that team?
I don't think they're going to do great in the American. I think there's better teams in the American.
And there was all this talk, you know, in between wrestling promos and Jesse Palmer speaking French last week. that Memphis was going to be a playoff team and this was going to be this big signature victory for them. I mean, really? Like, should you really be able to beat Arkansas, a lower tier SEC team, on your home field, no less, and run the table in the American and beat the other cupcakes that you beat out of conference and say that, hey, we're good enough, we're a playoff team? I mean, that's a different story. No, I don't think there's anything you can do in a loss that's going to make people feel better, because they've had the
moral victories.
The moral victories they've had. If moral victories, they'd be the national champion of moral victories. But it's, you got to have more than that. You got to win on the scoreboard. I'll tell you, there are games that feel like real turning points. I was in Columbia in 2017 when they lost to South Carolina. I think Arkansas was a favorite in that game. I don't remember, but I think they were like a 3-5 point favorite. And South Carolina just whipped them all day, scored a bunch of non-offensive touchdowns, beat them by 26. It was never close. And I feel like that year, the people who had kind of been on the fence about Brett Bielema, they jumped off. And for the rest of that season, it felt inevitable that Brett was going to be let go. And the Memphis game felt a lot like that for me about Pittman. I think that there were a lot of people who were still kind of in this boat to say, look, you got Petrino for a second year. You got this second year quarterback. Let's see if this works.
That's been me.
Let's see if Pittman really can turn that corner. Okay, yeah, he had the down year. He had 4-8, but they kind of came back a little bit next year. Let's see if they can build on that. Now, you know, I think that those people are done. They are done with Pittman. They're done with the football team for the rest of the year. They're off the fence. Some losses feel bigger than others. And I think when you lose to Memphis in a stadium full of Razorback fans, I mean, that was probably a 50-50 split there the other day. That is a terrible loss. That is a terrible loss. It doesn't matter if you're in the first year of your program, but it's certainly a terrible loss if you are in year six of your program and you've already been on the hot seat for two previous years, like he said today. I don't care how good Memphis is. Maybe they are a playoff team this year. That's still a terrible loss for Arkansas. And I think that there are a lot of people who on Saturday said,
yeah,
I'm done with this.
And it's just the way, like we've talked about, it's the way they lost. It's the, especially on defense, the effort, the perceived lack of effort, the kinds of mistakes that they are making. It's difficult to look at that and say, well, they're just right there, you know, and they aren't right there on defense. It's a shame that they might be kind of wasting what could be a really good offense. But it's just that, you know, the turnover thing is a problem. That's an offensive issue. And it's been a problem. You know, Talen didn't have his best game as far as, you know, we talked about this a little bit with Sam, was just kind of his reads weren't really there. He wasn't running the way he had been running. And that's what's hard when you have a quarterback like him, is over the course of the season, the more kind of just the wear and tear that you have over the course of the season, the harder it is to keep, you know, to sustain that level of effort. And I think we kind of started to see that. And so, I don't know, I think, and just with the way the defense played, with the lack of effort and the kind of mistakes, the just kind of the stuff that just makes you go, how is this, like, what are you doing? How is this happening? That's the kind of stuff that you just, you can't have, like you said, when you're this far in.
I feel like with Talen, you saw a little bit of a regression to the old Talen.
The
Talen
long sack, that made, I was like, it's last year.
Yeah, that's the Talen that 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, however long it was, when I sat here and I said I'm skeptical about Talen Green. That's why. Because he has this history of being turnover prone. And he had, and I think a lot of the turnovers, it's one thing to like fumble. It's one thing to be like a lot of his turnovers are interceptions where he just stares down a receiver. And he nearly got picked in the fourth quarter, two plays before he actually got picked. Yep. Looked like on almost the same play by the same defensive player. You know, the interception in the first quarter, you throw that ball away. You don't try to make that throw across the field, across your body. You know, and then the sack. I mean, that was a crippling sack.
Yep.
That doesn't count as a turnover, but that might as well have been a turnover right there, because you take your team out of a field goal range by losing 10 yards on third down. I think Talen has an instinct to just try to – he thinks he can outrun everybody. But in order to outrun them, he has this instinct to run backward. And we saw it a number of times last year. The Memphis game, that was the first time that we've seen it. And, you know, you give him a little bit of – I think he deserves a little bit of grace because he has played well this year. But one of the big knocks on him, at least from me, has been he makes these mistakes a lot of times in like really critical times that can change a game. You know, the Whit Weeks play last year against LSU, think about how that changed the game. It was a 34-10 final, but that was a close game when that happened. The fumbles against A&M last year, the fumble against Missouri, the interceptions in other games, the pick six against Oklahoma State. You can go like we've got a long list of plays that we can really point to where you can say in an Arkansas loss, this decision by Talen really changed the game. And it's not always a pass with him. I don't know. I still think he's going to have a good year. I'm more impressed, I think, with him at this point than I thought I would be. But having those plays against Memphis the way he did, especially the ones in the fourth quarter, it really makes you wonder, okay, is he really past all of these things that we were concerned about?
Right. I was just looking up. I know Pro Football Focus, they track turnover-worthy plays by quarterbacks, and he had 3 against Memphis, which was tied for the second. That was also the second most he had last year in any game was 3. I think the most was 4. So it's just interesting to kind of track things like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's unfortunate. I think they're playing better around him, which is helping significantly. But I, you know, we really kind of thought some of those decision-making things were going to be behind him, or at least less. And they are less, I guess. You know, we saw them come out the most in this fourth game. But I don't know. They just, I always think about, you know, Dabo Swinney loves to talk about complimentary football, and Arkansas just can't play complimentary football. It's just, it seems like the last couple of years they just haven't been able to. When one thing is going better, the offense is going better, well, now the defense stinks. Mm. So what are you going to do, you know? So I just, that always pops into my head whenever I think about things like this.
Green hadn't played a good defense yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't. Ole Miss, not a great defense. Memphis, not a good defense.
They're not going to this
weekend. I don't know they're going to before the end of October. I mean, Notre Dame, they're terrible.
Yeah.
A&M, we'll see. But Notre Dame had a lot of success against them. Tennessee, Georgia had a ton of success against them. Maybe it's just a bad year for for defense in this conference, or, you know, defense the teams that are on Arkansas' schedule. Real quick, let's talk about the buyout, the Sam Pittman buyout, because there's going to be a lot of talk about this. I'm sure, and I know there's already a lot of talk about it, and it'll continue to amplify if Arkansas gets off to an even worse start than they have so far. I've got it at, like, if he were to be let go right now, which I don't think he's going to be let go right now, and I think there's a lot of considerations that go into this. Number one, if you, like say, you know, a lot of people, they wanted him gone yesterday. Well, if you let him go, you might as well kiss this season goodbye. And some people may have already kissed this season goodbye. But, you know, you got that 30-day transfer portal that opens up. You've got the, you know, you're only 4 games into the season, so then you got that whole red shirt deal where people say, hey, I'm not playing anymore this year.
Yeah.
I'm maintaining this year, retaining this year, and going to count it toward a future year. I think that some of that might be a consideration. The buyout, everybody knows that if he is at or above 500, his record from 2021 and on, he'd be owed 75% of his remaining salary. It'd be 50% if they fall below 500. That record right now, 29 and 26. I could see a path where that gets to 29 and 29 with the teams that are coming up, Notre Dame, Tennessee, Texas A&M. I don't know if the buyout matters. Brandon Marcello was on a podcast yesterday, and we're going to have Brandon on our show later this week. But he said he's talked to people at Arkansas, and Brandon's plugged in here. Brandon used to have my job. Brandon knows people here. He still lives in town. He said he's talked to people who say the buyout doesn't matter. Like they'll pay the $9 million if they feel like that's in the best interest of the program. But, you know, you think about Arkansas, and you think about what Juracek has said about finances and not being positioned well because of finances. I mean, there's a path here where if they don't have a good season, and you hang on a little bit, you owe him about $3 million less.
I was going to say, am I crazy for feeling like the buyout should matter? Like, I know people don't want it to because they just want to know that change is coming and they just want to do it now and ever. But if they're going to keep talking about how broke they are,
yeah,
and you have a path to save money that is so clear and obvious, why would you not just do that? Well, I don't know.
And I don't know, other than just throwing raw meat to the wolves,
yeah,
I don't know what firing him during the season accomplishes for the long-term health of the program.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you get to a point and it gets like the end of the Chad Morris era where, you know, not only are you losing, but you're getting smacked around on your home field by Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
Maybe you do something then. I don't think it's going to get to that point. Say what you want to about Pittman. His teams, you know, they lose a lot of games, but they lose competitively. You know, there's a big
moral
difference. But what I'm saying is there's a big difference between how they've lost a lot of their games and what was going on with Chad Morris, or even what was going on with Brett in his last year or two. I mean, they got beat by 53 against Auburn, and they got, you know, I mean, they were getting dog walked a number of times. We haven't seen that happen with Pittman teams too often. It has happened, but not too often. It hasn't happened. I think they're going to continue to be competitive. So I don't know what firing him during the season would accomplish. But like I said earlier, it just feels like that game Saturday, that was the turning point.
Yeah.
Like anybody who was on the fence, I don't think you could talk to anybody right now outside of that building who would say, go talk to a fan out on Dixon Street out here. Go, go ask somebody, whatever. Text your friends. I don't think you could find anybody who would say, yes, I think it's a good idea that you continue down this path. I think that last weekend, that was the final nail. And now it's just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah. It's so funny. I have a lot of friends that just aren't that into sports. And so they don't know a whole lot about what I do. They just know I watch all the games and I'm at all the games and things like that. And so I was with some friends on Saturday night and one of them was like, oh, so you weren't at the game? Like you just watched it from home? And I was like, yeah, I just covered it from my couch. And they were like, oh yeah, so they were in Memphis? I was like, yeah, they played Memphis. They said, so I assume we won. And I said, no, actually, it was very bad. You know, so it's funny to even absorb, you know, people that are here and, you know, went to school here but aren't really like sports fans. Just, and they were like, wait, what? Weren't we supposed to win? I was like, yes, yeah. I can't even begin to explain it to you.
One more note on buyouts. All of the assistant coaches signed contracts earlier this year. They've all got buyouts too.
People forget about that. So, I forget about that sometimes.
Like all of the coaches except for one have multi-year contracts that run through the end of next season. So sometimes that gets, you know, there's an offset provision and you don't have to pay them anything because they go off and they find another job. Sometimes even better paying than the one that they lost. But that's something to keep in mind whenever you talk about contracts. Okay, when we come back, we want to talk about the SEC, not permanent, annual opponents. There is a difference. Chris Lowe of, almost said ESPN, Chris Lowe of On3, got to get used to that, yeah. Had a report today that said who the opponents are going to be. We'll mention that. Also, we've got some fall baseball to talk. I spent yesterday out at Baumwalker Stadium, talked to Dave Van Horn a little bit. I've got some thoughts on what I'm seeing from fall ball. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Big news in the SEC today. Bruce Pearl is reportedly retiring as Auburn's basketball coach. The timing of this, I tell you, my first thought whenever I hear the timing is health. My second thought is scandal. And then the third thought is, what the heck is going on here? You know, I think there have been some rumors that he's interested in the Senate seat that Tommy Tuberville has.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting that Auburn is now funneling coaches to the United States Senate. But I guess Tuberville, I think he's going for the governor, the governorship of Alabama. I don't know if that's it. You know, there's also reports, and I think this is going to happen, that his son is going to take over at Auburn. I guess this would ensure
he's
going to
coach this season, I guess.
The timing of this ensures that he's going to get his shot to do this. And I guess, you know, players can't really – where are they going to go?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't transfer maybe you can. I don't know the transfer rules. I don't think you're going to want to transfer 6-7 weeks before the season begins. But, boy, that was – I'm not usually shocked by news, and I don't think I was shocked by this – but this did hit a little bit of a level of surprise just because of the timing of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And didn't Virginia's coach do this last year? Didn't he retire?
He did, yeah. Like I think
right
even
before.
Like even closer to the start of the season.
And he just did it because he was like, I can't take these NIL kids anymore, basically. Which is like so annoying because you're just, I don't know. I just feel like you're screwing over your whole team for just like to have, I don't know, like a morality play. And that's not what Pearl's doing here, but it's just like, I don't know. This is dumb. Like,
I wonder if coaches get to a point where, you know, and we have our busy seasons, where there becomes kind of, there's always that point where you have this sense of dread, like, oh,
yeah,
here comes the storm.
I'm getting there right now.
You know, I wonder if coaches have that too, where
totally.
It's like,
yeah,
I just don't, you know, I think I can, you know, back in April. Yeah, you know, in 5 months after I have some time off and I've recharged the battery, I'm going to be fine. But then you start to get to that point and it's like, the battery's not recharged. And I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if that's what's going on with him.
I imagine this is because of the Senate thing, and that's annoying because it's, I don't know. I guess maybe he hadn't decided he was going to do it, and, you know, I can't speak for him. I don't know Bruce Pearl, but it's just like, if he wanted to do this, why couldn't he have retired a long time ago and then set his program up a little bit better, set his, at least this year's team up a little bit better? That just irks me.
This is probably breaking news to you. I've never, like, been involved in running for the Senate, so I don't know what that timing looks like.
You gotta put that on your bucket list.
I don't know if that you know, jives real well with a college basketball schedule or not. But yeah, that was interesting, that news today. And so I'm interested to see, does that change the perception of SEC basketball at all this year? Obviously, Auburn was thought to have a really good team. Arkansas was thought to have a really good team. Does that change the power dynamics at the top? Speaking of the SEC, the conference is going to announce tomorrow night the annual opponents for football teams moving forward from 26 to 29. There was some talk early on in this process that they were going to be called permanent opponents. And what the SEC wants to do is they want to create this basically like a look-in window where if a series were to get really good over the next 4 years, that they've got a chance to, at the end of 29, say, look, we want to have this game every single season. Like Alabama-LSU, that didn't used to be a great football game. They played for years, but then when Nick Saban went there, and now you got both of the teams competing for and winning national championships, that changed the dynamics of that series. And now Alabama and LSU, they play every single year.
They're not going to anymore. They're not going to anymore. Which surprises me. I was surprised to see that left off of here.
That is a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, for the longest time, not only did they play every year, but the SEC gave them the week off before they played, and then they put their game in primetime on CBS every single year. And so by rotating it or by having this look in every 4 years, it gives you that option where, you know, let's say somebody hires Nick Saban next year, and then all of a sudden that game against Alabama becomes a game that everybody wants to see. So Chris Lowe at On3, and I think Sydney's got the graphic pulled up, he says that Arkansas's permanent opponents, by the way, the SEC has got to be just thrilled that they had this whole primetime special tomorrow night. It's going to be on SEC Network, going to be on ESPN2. And here's Chris Lowe, and he scooped it 24-plus hours in advance. We'll see if he's right. I don't have any reason to think that he won't be right. But there you see it. Arkansas going to play, according to Chris, Missouri, Texas, and LSU every year. Now, this is a little bit different than what we've been told for a couple of years, that the expectation was Arkansas was going to play Texas, Missouri, and Ole Miss every single year. So now, no Ole Miss, it would be LSU. I have a conspiracy theory. Okay.
This is a good theory. I believe this theory.
Is it a theory or a hypothesis? My wife, the scientist, gets on to me all the
time. It would be, well, I don't know. Because
it's a conspiracy hypothesis?
Well, you can't really test it.
Well, we can test it when the schedule comes
out.
Which
would mean it would be neither a hypothesis nor a thesis. I don't know.
Okay. Here it is.
Ask Ashley.
Here it is. The end of the year matchups. You know, Arkansas plays Missouri right now, and everybody just loves that rivalry. the end of the year matchups this last year, after they went to a 16-team conference, Texas played A&M, and so LSU lost A&M, and LSU and Oklahoma ended up playing this last season. LSU and Oklahoma are not permanent or annual opponents. They're not annual opponents. LSU's annual opponents are Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. Here's my theory. / hypothesis. I'm not a scientist. You can correct me in the comments if you want to. I think Arkansas LSU is going back to Thanksgiving weekend next year. I think Missouri and Oklahoma are going to play on Thanksgiving weekend moving forward. OU Mizzou is a rivalry that dates back to, like, I think it was called the Big Six in the early 1900s. I think that based on what I see here, because, you know, South Carolina, they're going to play Clemson. You got all these teams that are going to play throughout the state. You're not moving Texas and Texas A&M. You're not moving Tennessee and Vanderbilt. You're not moving the Egg Bowl, I don't think.
That would be crazy.
You're not moving the Iron Bowl, I don't think. I think Arkansas and LSU, if this is right, I think there's a path here that Arkansas and LSU are going to play an end-of-season game again against each other.
Which unless I would be so excited about.
The governor of Arkansas gets her wishes and Arkansas plays Arkansas State in War Memorial instead. Which one would you like to see?
I would be very excited if they would play LSU at the end of the year again. That's like what I grew up with. You know, that's nostalgia for me. I remember, you know, we've talked a lot. Every year when we do the whole Is Missouri a Rival thing, we talk about like how different people, depending on generation and depending on geography, different Arkansas fans have different teams that they view as rivals the most. Growing up, the team I hated the most as an Arkansas fan was LSU. In large part because of this game, I really liked, you know, we would go down there for this game. And so I think I would be really excited to see it come back at the end of the year. You know, I think especially here's a really selfish reason. When I go up for the Missouri game, none of my Missouri people that I know are there because it's Thanksgiving break and everyone's gone. So I don't get to like go see my professors or like my friends that still live there. I don't get to see them because they're all gone. So selfishly, this would be great for me if they played Missouri earlier in the year because I could see people. And so that's what I want.
It is all about you.
It is. Right? Of course it is. They're doing this for me. I called Greg. I have his phone number. I called him and I said,
do you really have his phone number?
Yeah.
You do have his phone number?
Yeah.
How about that?
Here's a really funny, I don't know if he'll appreciate me saying this, but I will anyway. My dad's contact picture for him was like a picture of Paul Ryan. Like it's like a goofy picture of Paul Ryan like lifting a weight. I don't know why. I don't know the story. It's like, I don't know. But so I think that's because I got his number from him. I think I have Greg Sankey my phone with like a picture of Paul Ryan in like a weird Paul Ryan picture.
This could create a good segment. Like, what's the most famous person that you have in your cell phone?
It's I'd have to go through Will Muschamp because Will Muschamp texted me once thinking I was my dad.
Oh,
that happened.
Interesting. I get a lot of texts people thinking I'm the other Matt Jones.
I believe that. Yeah.
That gets kind of interesting.
Which is so funny because every time people talk about the other Matt Jones, I think they're talking about you.
I appreciate that. Okay, so I've got my handy-dandy notebook out here. Some notes from baseball scrimmage yesterday. Just a few things that I've seen from fall ball. And they scrimmaged for a long time yesterday. In fact, they were going to scrimmage even longer. And then, like it feels like for about 20 days now, it rained.
Yeah.
It stormed here in Fayetteville. And so they had to cut it a little bit short. And I mentioned this with Joe Healy last week whenever he was on our show. Ryder Helfrich. Like if you're wanting to buy stock in a player right now, buy stock in Ryder Helfrich. This guy looks incredible. Yesterday he went 3 for 5, 5 RBI, hit like a 400-foot home run. Can't get him out, and I say that kind of tongue in cheek. You can get him out, but you know Matt Hobbs gave me a good quote. He said he's one of those guys where he might miss a pitch once or twice a game, like any hitter. He said, but for the most part, if you miss the pitch, he's sitting there waiting on it, and it's either going to go in the seats or it's going to go 110 miles an hour somewhere. I'm really, really impressed with him. I wrote something about him on our website. It's there today. But this reminds me, and I do it all the time, but I hate making comps. I remember when Heston Kerstad in the fall of 19 was just hitting the cover off the baseball. And you knew that he was going to be really good the next year because of what he was doing in fall practice. It feels a little bit like that with what Ryder's doing right now. And that was the Kerstad year where people thought he could have won the Golden Spikes had COVID not shut down the season. Now, I'm not in any form or fashion saying that Ryder is going to be a Golden Spikes winner. But what I do think is that if he has a season, if the fall translates to the season the way that I've seen it do with other players in their draft year, I think that we're looking at him having one of those years where, bare minimum, you're talking about him as a potential first-round draft pick, and potentially you're talking about him as all-SEC, all-America. I just think he is playing lights out right now. And that's what you want to have from your catcher, especially on a team that has 25 new players and about two-thirds of those or three-fifths are – pitchers and other catchers.
Yeah. What else have you gotten to see when you've gone out there? Because you told me the other day that you felt like it was a very spirited practice. Like
yesterday, I thought it was.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, that was very spirited. A lot of back and forth between the dugouts, like in a you know, positive way.
Yeah, yeah.
Coach is kind of getting into it a little bit too, you know, kind of help egg him on a little bit. And, yeah, I feel like, and again, we're not in the clubhouse. We're not with them whenever they leave the stadium. But it does feel just in like kind of a little bit of the interaction, like that whole thing that you saw yesterday with the dugouts. I think that's where you form a little bit of your camaraderie mm-hmm. as a team. You know, I think that you form a lot of camaraderie as a team when you're actually in the dugout. Like you can do stuff together in the off season, but it's like when you really come together as a team, or potentially don't come together as a team, is whenever you're in that dugout together when the season begins. And so you can see that, I think, in a little bit of bits and pieces right now. I thought it was very spirited yesterday. Let's see here. Carson Brumbaugh, freshman.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about him, but you've mentioned him to me a couple times. So I want to hear your Carson Brumbaugh takes. Well, not takes, but thoughts.
First off, you look at the other freshman, and he just looks different physically. Like, especially in the lower half. Like, his legs are way more mature. And I mean, and of course, think about it. Hold on. As a hitter.
I know what you mean. It just sounds funny to say someone has mature legs. But I understand what you're saying.
Bigger, stronger legs.
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
Better than mature?
It's just funny. I know what you mean. It's not a bad assessment. It's just funny.
We could go a lot of places with this. But the Brumbaugh, he looks physically different than a lot of freshmen who come in. Mm-hmm. And I think he looks really good in the field. They've worked him out at shortstop. They've worked him out at third base. There's still this wild card with Arkansas's infield. What happens with Nolan Souza when he comes back? I talked to Van Horn yesterday. He said that Souza, in all of the drills that he's able to do right now, which is basically a lot of fielding work, he looks really good. And he's a leader, obviously chomping at the bit to get back out there, but you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, you got to let the rehab be the rehab. So where does Souza fit into the infield? And then once he fits in, where does everybody else fit? Yeah. Because I think with Brumbaugh, I think with TJ Pompey, who's a transfer from Texas Tech, I think they can fit in at multiple positions. But what gives you the best four player infield defensively? That's a little bit to be determined. And we're really not going to know that, I don't think. We might have an idea of it. You know, like Nolan Souza, he's played second base and he's done it well. If he's their second baseman, you know, then we've got a little bit better feel for how that looks. But we're not going to know until closer to the season. But I like Brumbaugh. I think he's a good hitter. He is also a pitcher. And you can see the strong arm when he plays in the field. Yesterday, a couple of plays where it might be a little bit of a bobbled exchange, might be a ball that, you know, he didn't field cleanly, but it hit his body. Picks that thing up barehanded and fires it across the diamond, and the guy's out. And I don't know. There's just – you can see it with him. Like, the physical ability is better than, a lot of freshmen that you see at this point in their career. I think he's a good hitter. Does a pretty good job of getting on base. Good arm. Like his defense. I think he's got a chance to play this year. I think he's one of the players that has really stood out to me. Anything else?
Have the coaches mentioned
Damian
anything?
Damian Ruiz would be the other one. He had a good day yesterday. I think that he's got a good chance to be their leadoff hitter.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there anything the coaches have mentioned with Brumbaugh yet about, you know, stuff they need to see him do? You know, because it is hard when you have a freshman. You can have, you know, in any sport, you can have a freshman who looks really good, who looks ahead of schedule, but still maybe isn't ready all the way there, you know, as in their freshman season. Is there anything they've kind of highlighted or that you've seen?
It's hard to get nothing that I've seen with, you know, kind of an untrained eye. And it's hard to get coaches to talk a whole lot about freshmen.
Yeah.
Because, and especially in this program, they want the freshmen to prove it. They want the freshmen to earn getting talked about a whole lot. Yeah. They'll tell you some stuff every now and then, but there's always, I felt like, a little bit of a hesitancy to talk about freshmen. But I've been impressed with him. Mm-hmm. I don't want to set up unrealistic expectations for him other than to say I think that as a freshman, he's got a chance to play a lot right out of the gate, whereas with a lot of freshman position players, you don't see that mm-hmm. with them. It reminds me a little bit of Caden Wallace. Caden Wallace, Peyton Stovall might be another one. Those guys were ready to play right away. I think that with Brumbaugh, he might he might fit into that mold. I'm not going to say that he's going to be SEC freshman of the year or all freshman team or anything like that. I just think that he is prepared to play. Offensively, this weekend, what I saw was probably the best offensive day they've had. Well, the flip side of that is that, you know, the pitching wasn't as sharp. But I think that a good fall practice is when you have kind of a healthy back and forth, where the pitchers have some good days and the hitting has some good days. And I feel like for the most part, I've seen in the days that I've been there, and I haven't been there every day, but in the days I've been there, it feels like there's been this healthy, hey, pitching and defense was really good today. Hey, offense was better today than they were. And I feel like that's when you see a more complete team. And I want to go back real quick to one other thing about Ryder Helfrich. When he and I were talking, I was talking to him about how well he's hitting this fall, and he gave me this great quote. He started to say that he's staying in the strike zone better this year. And then he stopped himself. He said, I'm staying in my zone better, which is even probably a smaller target than the strike zone. It's just, you can tell that this guy is really confident. Physically, he looks good. And it seems like the game's just not too big for him right now. It just seems like it's really slowed down for him at the plate. And I think that I think the sky's the limit for him. Matt Hobbs told me, he said, if you're a scouting director, I don't know what you're looking for in the top 20 picks more than what Ryder Helfrich gives you.
Yeah. How much more fall practices are they going to do, and how much will you be able to get out there?
Well, they're going to have the open practice Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where
but Friday nights you can't do.
I can't be there Friday night, but somebody will be there.
Yeah.
They're going to have the open practice Friday night. They're going to have a lot of recruits in because of the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
They'll go and think about if you're a baseball recruit. Like, not only do you get to see what a football game day is like on this campus, but the way Arkansas has done these open scrimmages on these Friday nights, like 4,000 or 5,000 people show up every
year.
That's
crazy.
And so you actually kind of get a feel for, if you haven't been here for an unofficial visit, a feel for, hey, this is kind of what a game day might look like
right. In
Fayetteville. So big recruiting weekend for them this week. They'll scrimmage on Friday night. I'm sure they'll have another scrimmage another day, if not two more days this weekend. And then everything is building up to, in a couple of weeks, October 10th, Little Rock is scheduled to come in on a Friday night, 6 o'clock first pitch. Little Rock, who's got Evan Lee, by the way, just got promoted to their pitching coach. And then on Saturday the 11th, the same day that the football team plays at Tennessee, DBU, really good program, Dallas Baptist, is going to come in and play Arkansas in another exhibition on that day the 11th. I think it's a 1 o'clock first pitch is when that's scheduled. So everything's building up to that point. And then, you know, those two fall exhibitions are over. Fall ball's over. You get in the weight room. And you have an earlier preseason this year, or you can have an earlier preseason. In the past, the preseason was 3 weeks before opening day. Now you've got a longer runway. Now you've got 5 weeks before opening day. And so theoretically, I mean, teams could be out there practicing for the start of the season as early as like January 10th or 11th or something this year. So it's a different kind of offseason this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I know everybody's really excited about baseball stuff right now because people don't want to focus on... Yeah. We had somebody on our message board. It was funny. I appreciated it. Post being like, can we get some more baseball and basketball? Mm. This was like on Saturday after the game. They were like, so what's new with baseball and basketball? Because I just really want to know.
I feel like I light up when I talk about
baseball.
You totally
do.
Whenever whenever I go over there, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
When I'm Coming interviewing them.
And talk, this is amazing.
It's not even just a good team. It's just, I like baseball.
Yeah.
I like it. Just there's something about being over there that makes you feel good. So that's your Razorback baseball report today. No presenting sponsor. It's just your Razorback baseball report. Hey, we appreciate you being here with us today. We'll have another podcast tomorrow. You can read more baseball content, basketball content. Anthony Christensen talked to some basketball players over the weekend. All of that at our website, wholehogsports.com. Hope we see you tomorrow.